Different animal and the same beast.
Streaming live on YouTube.
You're gonna break up with me because of what I do on the radio?
Here's Theo Dorsey.
Good people. I gotta be honest with you all. This hell of a weekend, by the way. Hell of a weekend. But this day today, this show, very impromptu. You're gonna be very off the cuff. We're flying by the seat of our pants here, on Theoretically Speaking. And we're doing so because I literally just got to the office. Just got inside the Evan Cohen Studios, fresh off the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans luncheon. I am suited and booted for our YouTube and streaming audience. So you'll see I used to pull up like this to work every day back when I was a TV lad, when I was a very serious sports journalist, a TV talking sports anchor. But now as a guy that's a sports talker that just, you know, chops it up with the good people, it's weird to see me in a suit, but it's going to be very impromptu. We're going to be talking today about the biggest win of this football weekend between college football and the NFL. As things are closing in, we are literally getting ready to crown champions. I think you all know which way my head is going. C-Cat's on the other side of the glass on the ones and twos. And C-Cat, for the first time in his lifetime here in South Florida, experienced the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans luncheon. And you also almost witnessed me losing my job, like simultaneously.
Yeah, the energy in that room was palpable. And yeah. Theodorus is over there pouring kerosene on the flames of rowdy 17 through 24-year-olds, because we know how college football is these days. You have guys graduating early like Miami's Malachi Toney, and you have guys that are closer to, I don't know, retirement in terms of an AARP card than they are to graduating high school. Yeah. So a lot of kids in there, rambunctious, fun, and Theo, you made it that more interesting.
So this is, I take full responsibility, but I do want to go out there and say it. I take responsibility for anything negative that might have happened. I cannot take ownership of all of the positives and the joy that came from it, but the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans luncheon. This is a thing that we do every single year. It's the day before the eventual bowl game. This is the 12th annual game. It's one of the biggest parties and celebrations of college football in all of the nation, and it happens right here in South Florida. So, again, if you don't have your tickets, BocaRatonBowl.com. The game kicks off at 2 o'clock tomorrow. FAU's Flagler Credit Union Stadium. Toledo and Louisville going to be going at it. The reason why we're talking specifically about what happened at the luncheon is this is my second year, C-Cat. Second year ever being bestowed the honor of being the MC of said luncheon, where you have the full Louisville Cardinal team, the full Toledo team, head coaches, all of that, and you have a lot of the prestigious people from around the county, mayors, county commissioners, you got Bush's Baked Beans, all the sponsors, everybody's in the house. It's a packed luncheon at the convention center. We even had C-Cat in the house this time.
Yeah, I made it, showed some face.
C-Cat, we've had an argument on this station left and right about delicacies, specifically appetizers in the form of salads. And can you do you care to tell the good people which salad they decided to pick for a huge event here?
This argument all took place off air.
We never talked about this in the air?
No, this is all through a group.
Well, nobody would have known that. Nobody would have known that. They would have, I missed that episode of Theoretically Speaking. I got to watch more.
Yeah. I'm arguing that the Caesar salad is having a moment right now, and it is primo number one salad in the game because of its versatility. And Theo, you immediately took umbrage to that statement and thought I was way ahead of myself.
The wedge is number one.
You think the wedge?
Right. When it comes to salads in the salad game, it goes like this.
Number two.
Caesar salad.
Number one.
The wedge.
Okay.
And what do we have for to kick things off at the luncheon today?
We had the wedge salad for lunch.
Okay, so properly, if you want to do that, you would have said
number one.
The wedge. So we had a wedge salad there to start things off. We had a nice steak with some kind of steak, sirloin steak. Maybe. I didn't get a chance to eat it.
Yeah. I think short rib might be the answer.
Short rib?
I'm really bad at that stuff. It's all beef to me.
Okay. I mean, at this point, the radio audience isn't like, well, what flavor did you get it well done? I don't care about that. What they care about was how did I almost lose my job?
Uh-huh.
This is usually a very buttoned up, momentous occasion. We have the head coaches speak. We give out a Legends Award. Shout out to Jordan Travis, Florida State former quarterback, Palm Beach County legend. He got the Palm Beach County Legends Award presented by the David A. Burke Foundation. So that was huge. All of that stuff had taken place. We are getting to the end of this program. And you were with me when this happened, when I was made aware of this. I'm sitting at the table with C-Cat. Executive Director of the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans, Doug Mosley, is speaking at the podium when the DJ from this event comes over to our table. He grabs me and he tells me something in my ear.
Yeah.
And you're watching this, you're like, oh, something must be going wrong. What do you think? If you're seeing this interaction happen, you know it's important.
I guess so. He was very intense in his movements.
Yes.
Like, he rushed up to get you, had things to say, and then darted back away.
So he said some things. I took said things in. I went up to the podium, and I announced the way in which we were ending this event. Again, with our county commissioners, our mayors, our leaders of this area, people that put this thing together, I announced that we will be ending the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans luncheon in a ceremonious dance-off. Hey!
Uh-huh.
People vibe. People are like, oh my God, this is crazy. Everybody's excited. And I'm like, wow, I'm so happy to have delivered this announcement to the stage, to the audience. The fans are loving it. The teams are loving it. The DJ, Will, he comes over. He takes the microphone. He marches to the stage. As I'm watching Will come up to the stage, though, I can't help but see something else happening out in the crowd. And that is the executive director of the Boca Raton Bowl, the Bush's Baked Beans, Boca Raton Bowl of Beans, Doug Mosley. He looks a little bit puzzled. He's starting to make his way to the stage as
well. So if there's one person that knows how this should be proceeding, is him.
Yeah.
And this is not how it should be proceeding, according to his body language.
This is the body language of a man who is not happy with Theo Dorsey. He's like, what the hell are you talking about?
You hijacked it.
So I then proceed to walk off the stage. Will ensues with a dance-off that, might I tell you, C-Cat, you went through the entire luncheon. What are you going to remember most from this luncheon that we just left?
It was Stomp the Yard.
Yeah.
Like, these guys, they cared more about dancing than they did watching tape and studying up on their opposition Toledo or the opposition Louisville.
It got intense. Toledo marched up to the stage, and they Toledo went first in a dance-off. They got, what was the song they got? I forget the song.
I don't know, man.
Pass Me the Hookah was for Louisville second. First, Toledo went, and they got the song, Not Get the Gat. Remember, what's the song LSU does the dance to?
That is the song they do the dance to.
No, it's Not Get the Gat. It's the new song. It used to be Get the Gat. This song is another one. It's like a dance that the LSU received. Type in LSU football celebration. I bet you it'll come up. Toledo does that one first. I'm getting old. That's how you know I'm getting old. I also know I'm getting old because a player from Louisville came up to me after the luncheon, and he said, yo, I knew that was you. I'm like, what are you talking about? He like, bruh, I grew up watching you. Turns out, this is somebody from South Georgia where I started my TV career who was like, when I saw your name on the program and I heard you talking, I recognized that voice. I'm like, bro, you from WALB. I said, damn it, if kids that grew up watching me are now playing college football, like, these gray hairs are not just a symbol of of stress. I think I'm getting old. Did you find it?
Every answer I'm getting is not the answer. Okay. We got Neck. We got Colin Baton Rouge. We got Tiger Rag.
It was, I don't care to even try to figure. It doesn't matter. They both go at it. It was a huge dance-off. It was amazing. Both teams, by the end of this dance-off, it started off with just three players from each team, and it ended up both teams, literally the full teams, crowding around each other, and they converged right in front of the stage. The troopers got up from their table, and they made their way to the front just to make sure everything was all good and kosher, and it was.
It was like a West Side Story.
It was.
You had the Jets and the Sharks right in the middle. It was beautiful.
And mind you, the issue is the only people who know that this was supposed to happen, turns out, was me and the DJ. Because C-Cat, cut the music. This was not in the program.
No.
This was not anywhere in the program. So Lindsay from our team, who does a great job of helping put on the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans every year, Paige from their side, from ESPN Events, Doug Mosley from their side, everybody is like, Theo, what the hell are you talking about? Why did you tee this thing up? And also, if anything goes wrong, it's all on you. So everybody in the room was sweating.
This is happening while you're getting told this while the dance off is ensuing, not afterwards.
No, I got told it after the dance off happens.
Okay.
I got told that it wasn't an official thing. I realized it wasn't an official thing because I witnessed the response of the leaders involved. Like Doug, Paige, Lindsay, the troopers, everybody kind of was like, yo, the hell is going on here? And then Lindsay comes up to me as it's kind of wrapping up. She's like, hey, you need to wrap this damn luncheon up. This is not a part of the program.
Everyone seemed to have a good time.
And to be honest with you, it was a great time. Everybody enjoyed it. Here's the thing, though. It's the worst of both worlds for me. Because afterwards, everybody's like, yo, Theo, why the hell did you think of a dance hall? That's such a great idea. It turned out great. And I was like, I can't take credit for the dance off. Can't take credit for the great vibes that was added by Digital Vibes and by Will, who actually had the idea. So I was like, it wasn't my idea. Mm-mm. But if things went wrong, guess who would have taken the blame?
You announced the dance off. That's on you. Blood's on your hands, Theo.
There was no winning in that. There was no winning.
Yeah. Thankfully, both sides were very, very positive. Yeah.
They were
playful
positive.
And fun. And a lot of bodies, a lot of big dudes, a lot of D1 college football players converging in a very tight space. So you never know when there's missed, you know, connections and
anything can happen in those.
You bump into a guy just because you didn't see him there. He thinks you shoves him in the back, and then things can get a lot worse than what actually happened, which was a good time.
It was a good time. I was talking to Reggie afterwards with Baptist Health, and I was like, see, you can do things like that before a football game with two teams that have zero familiarity, like Louisville and Toledo. Like, that's not Ohio State, Michigan. That's not Florida State, Miami. These are not kids recruited from the same area. These are not players and teams that have faced each other a lot. There's no familiarity there, so there's no contempt. So imagine trying to do something like that the day after the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans, then you have a greater problem on your hands.
Yeah.
So it was a win-win-win. Everybody involved had a good time. Speaking of wins, though, CCAT, the college football weekend, the NFL weekend, was packed with important wins. From the teams that capped it off, like the New England Patriots getting a win over your Baltimore Ravens, to also, I will say, in the college football playoff, a team like little old Alabama out of Tuscaloosa. Nobody believes in them. Everybody's doubting them. They get the upset win, but technically, even though they were underseeded, they were favored in the game over Oklahoma in Norman. That was all fine and dandy. But good people, I'm here to tell you that the most important, the most impactful, the most telling win of this weekend in the game of football came by way of those Miami Hurricanes. The U, it's all about the U. 10-3. At College Station, imagination, trepidation, Canes in four. Quarters, that is. We didn't need overtime. You see what I did there? That was the Shannon Sharp.
I like it.
Because it was like you say one thing, you say the name, and then you
got to rhyme too.
Yeah. Has to rhyme. That's the people. It's kind of hard to do on the fly there. I just tried it out. It was pretty hard to do. CCAT, the Canes got a culture win on Saturday. The Canes got a big win, not just their first CFB playoff win in program history, CCAT, but I think this is a culmination of what it looks like to completely rebuild a program and do it from the ground up. Mario Cristobal came in, ripped this thing to the studs. He was able to recruit the area of Miami, the state of Miami, as Howard Schnellenberger once called it when he formed what the Miami Hurricanes came to be in the 80s. Getting guys like Malachi Tony, they called him Baby Jesus, and he came up huge in the biggest moment, getting the game-winning touchdown on the back end there, an end-around following what was almost a disastrous fumble. You think about how you get two, not one, but two interceptions from another true freshman from the Miami area. You think about what Reuben Bain did. Reuben Bain, who's going to be a top 10 pick in this NFL draft, CCAT. Reuben Bain, he showed up with a point to prove, and he didn't do a lot of talking beforehand. Texas A&M linemen were barking, saying, oh, he's not going to be a problem to handle. Reuben Bain not only had three sacks and pressured the quarterback all throughout the second half, Marcel Reed, Reuben Bain also got the blocked field goal kick early in the game that helped the Canes. Because if you think about it, points were at such a premium that field goal miss, the other ones that happened that missed almost punt return touchdown that ended up in 0 points for the Canes, like every single little inch was fought for, and the Canes were able to do it and do it in a huge way. And I said all of that without even giving enough proper credit to the man, the myth, the legend, running back Mark Fletcher. Running back Mark Fletcher, who, out of all of the plays he made, 17 carries, 172 yards, didn't get into the end zone, but literally extended every drive every single time the Canes needed him to and helped milk the game in the end. Mark Fletcher's most important play, most important moment that he actually had, might have been following Malachi Toney's turnover, his fumble in the fourth quarter when he went over to the bench and consoled his former high school football teammate to help him keep his head in the game because the Canes would need him, and it turned out right. The Miami Hurricanes made a statement at College Station. All right, they went in there as dogs. They went in there much maligned. People thought they shouldn't be there. At least some did. People thought that Notre Dame had a better resume. I heard a lot of people fighting for BYU in Texas. No. The Canes are a damn good football team. They had a couple of missteps against two very good football squads in Louisville and SMU. The ACC doesn't get enough credit for how good it is. And I think Miami doesn't get enough credit for how great of a team that they have become, that defensive unit being an all-out, just stout, just dog. Like, you got to – I don't give a damn if it's 3rd and 28. We going to play it. We planned it just like we played it in the first couple of downs to get you backed up like this. That is a team that pins their ears back and puts teams into tough situations. And Mike Elko said it best himself after the game when asked by the media, when he said specifically, where did you lose this game? We lost it at the line of scrimmage. The Miami Hurricanes made a statement. Next up is going to be Ohio State, C-Cat. And this is the most important win of the football weekend to me because it not only symbolized that the Hue is back, it doesn't just symbolize that Mario Cristobal, who was his job was on the line to start this season. He was one of those guys that was in the running for first coach fired. Now, again, from within the walls of Coral Gables, that wasn't true. But outside looking in, he was a guy that was on shaky grounding. And for him to turn this thing around and do what he did this year with this program, backs against the wall, for him to get on his press tour when people wanted Notre Dame in over Miami, for him to keep the guys with the same amount of resolve that they needed to go out and win that football game on the road, this is a man that has his finger on the pulse. This is a man that is in full control. And I think the Canes, this is just step one. This is a culture win for the Canes, and this is just step one. I think this means much more for the future of what this Miami program is going to be. And I don't think it ends with Ohio State next week. That's how big that win was.
That was massive because it was the identity of a Mario Cristobal team. It was winning in the trenches, and they did just that. It wasn't – when we're talking about challengers to SEC powers, and Texas A&M for the longest time this season had the inside track to not only be in the SEC championship game, but to be the number one seed in that championship game. So this was an SEC power that Miami did beat in their own building in a playoff atmosphere. You think about a way to beat a team like that, maybe a mobile quarterback, maybe just crazy speed on the outside like it's CeeDee Lamb at Oklahoma and beating someone over the top. Not punching them in the face and taking their lunch money, but that's what Miami did. They out-physicaled them, and they just dominated them. The final score is probably not as indicative of the dominance as it should be.
Yeah, Miami could have won this thing like 24-3 if they just, like, if little things went in their favor. And I know you can say that about any football game, right? It always comes down, it's a game of inches. It always comes down to a few plays. Oh, if this went right, if this went wrong. But you wouldn't feel that way about Texas A&M. Like, there was no time in which, even as a Canes fan who was nervous, I'm sitting on nails, I don't want to ever think it's over, I never felt fully threatened by them because the defense had them in an absolute prison. Marcel Reed, 25 for 39, 237 yards, but it had the two interceptions. Carson Beck didn't turn the ball over. That is what was most important. Malachi Toney, he was bottled up. They literally were doubling him the whole game. I mean, receiving-wise, 5 catches, 22 yards. Rushing, he had 3 rushes only. Like, he didn't have a huge electric day, but he had the punt return, and then he had a play that will go down in Canes history. It helped seal. It helped win literally the first playoff game in program history. Here it is, Malachi Toney coming around the edge to score 6.
5 plays on the drive, all of them carries by Fletcher. For 75 yards. Undoubtedly, no, they're not going to give it again. They're going to give it to Toney. Toney scores a touchdown. What a call by Shannon Dawson. Beautifully executed. Malachi Toney comes to the forefront for Miami again.
That call, courtesy of ESPN, that Malachi Toney scoring the points that will put Miami ahead. But it wasn't over. Texas A&M would eventually get the ball back, not once but twice, and they would drive the field. They marched into Miami territory. They were in the red zone, a place that they were unfamiliar with throughout the day because Miami's defense had been that stout. But, hey, you know how it goes late in games. Teams get desperate. They start making plays. But speaking of making plays, there's another Miami freshman who would help seal the deal. Bryce Fitzgerald is not a starter for this team, but came in spelling a D-back that went out with injury. He had an interception in the first half, and here he is in the back of the end zone helping do whatever. It was this huge sigh of relief heard around the nation for Canes fans as Bryce Fitzgerald, a true freshman, makes this play. Take a listen.
Reed gets it to the end zone. Intercepted! Picked off again by the freshman, Bryce Fitzgerald.
The reason this is huge, C-Cat, is because they're not just doing this with quote-unquote transfer mercenaries. This isn't just Cam Ward coming in and putting on a superhero cape and saving the day and then leaving off to the NFL draft the next year. This isn't a bunch of dudes who aren't native to the area. This isn't a bunch of dudes that we don't feel connected with. No. These are South Florida natives, specifically those two Miami natives who last year were literally ripping it up on the high school football fields in this area, who are making the game-sealing, game-clinching plays in favor of Miami. The tide has turned. I heard that a million times, by the way, after the Oklahoma-Alabama game when Bama went down 17 and then they end up winning. The tide turned. Can we stop? I'm going to go ahead and outlaw us saying the tide has turned with any Bama games. It's too easy. Yeah. It's too easy. It's low-hanging fruit. But the tide has turned with the Miami Hurricanes in a way in which I don't think it's going to get unraveled again. They're now 11-2. They are now in the second round of the CFB playoffs in a Cotton Bowl against a familiar foe in Ohio State. And I said it before, I'll say it again. On Saturday, that was the biggest win in program history for Miami since the Miami Hurricanes beat Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl before it was unrightfully taken away.
Yeah, that was a win for about, 6 to 10 seconds?
Yeah, that was about a 7.5 second win. I remember celebrating at my home in Houston, Texas, as a Canes fan from afar. Yeah. National champ. Here's number 6.
You were like a Detroit Lions fan in the crowd on Sunday when they heard the touchdown stands. Okay.
But you know what? It happened. It happened, and it matters. The refs jobbed Miami in that game. Everybody knows it. Everybody and their mama knows it. Ohio State fans know it. I talked to a former Ohio State football player who was on that team on the sidelines watching. He was a freshman, so he didn't play. And he told me, yeah, I thought it was over. The Canes won in that moment 20-some-odd years ago in 2003. And it got taken away later. This was the biggest win since that win. That's what I'll say. And I'm excited to see them be able to exercise those demons now next week. And I don't want to put too much on this game because it's – I don't want to make it bigger than what it is. It is a huge game, right? You're in the quote-unquote elite eight of college football right now. But the Canes have a chance to go on this magical run that could start with Texas A&M, a team they have recent history with at least. Mike Elko, former head coach of Duke, former ACC Duke. There's some ties there. Then it can move into Ohio State exercising the demons of unrightful national championship game from 03. And then next up could be the University of Georgia. I think Carson Beck knows those guys. That could be fun.
They've got history.
This could be a magical run the Canes are on. But that was the biggest win of the weekend, man, and I absolutely loved it. I adored it. This was a great weekend for me.
Oh, and it was awesome because, the team that many wanted in this game over Miami, they couldn't beat Texas A&M at home in South Bend.
Let 40 up on against them. Well, it was 41-40.
Yeah.
Let up 41 to those dudes. Miami held them to 3. I think we know who the better team was.
And it was just a toughness win, man. It's crazy when you look on the football field for two different football teams that call themselves Miami. One of which plays college ball, one of which plays professional football. And you could not, in the past 3 years, use different adjectives to describe their culture. Yeah. One is tough as hell. One, soft as hell. And you know which one I'm talking about when I'm talking about the Dolphins and the Hurricanes. It was a massive program pivoting and program defining win in College Station on enemy lines in the SEC.
Do you think it was better because it was on the road?
Yes.
it felt even better. It felt even greater. Because if this happens at Hard Rock Stadium, as much as it would have been fun for the home fans to be able to be a part of it, it felt like there was more. There's more magnitude to doing that on the road against an SEC team.
It feels like home wins are more celebrations, and road wins are more points being proven. And Miami football needs to prove points to prove that they belong at this level, well, whether you think they have more to prove or not.
They absolutely do. And y'all let us know on the Baptist Health Hotline, 888-760-3776. What was the biggest win of the weekend? Maybe I'm biased. I mean, it is all about the U. 888-760-3776. Hit us up on the Baptist Health Hotline. Let us know. Biggest win of the football weekend, man. There was some pretty big ones. Hey, the Titans got a win. That was big for draft order. 888-760-3776. Hit us up on the Baptist Health Hotline. 888-760-3776. I do want to tell y'all there is something fun coming to town soon in February. And that is the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. I want you to make sure you get your tickets today. It starts February 25th through March the 1st of next year. But don't think of it as so far. Like, we're that close to 2026. We're, what, 8-9 days away? Get your tickets today. TheCognizantClassic.com. TheCognizantClassic.com. You can watch PGA Tour players take on the Bear Trap, one of the toughest stretches in golf, all while enjoying an elevated fan activities all around every corner. Tickets for the tournament are on sale right now. TheCognizantClassic.com. Get your tickets today. Get your upgraded fan experience right now. I want you to check out the premium hospitality areas like the Shoreline Suites, the 1909 Terrace. Remember, these names have ties to the area. These are Palm Beach County specific names. 1909, that resonates with people who know the history of Palm Beach County for sure. And if you're looking for something lighter, more energy, make sure you make your way to the Bear Trap where you'll see myself, you'll see C-Cat, you'll see Tina, you'll see the whole gang overlooking the iconic 17th hole. You got beer, you got wine, you got soft drinks, all included with those tickets. And you can get those tickets at thecognizantclassic.com. That is thecognizantclassic.com. Tap in with the good people, man. It's going to be a good time, good vibes. We got to get Ty back on the show soon. Do some Who Missed the Cut. Issue is I keep on missing the show because I've been having all these dental issues. TheCognizantClassic.com. C-Cat, have you been missing your golf lessons as of late? Or you been on it?
I've been on it. We just had to skip 1 week because of the holidays, but I've been getting my golf lessons on.
What's your holiday plans?
People come to town. My coach Pete out of town for the holidays, you know. But now I'm being able to use what I've learned from the Kaiser Golf Coaching Center actually on the course at a more reliable rate.
Okay. So you're going to be good.
I'm going to be good. We have a company party tonight.
We do have a company party tonight. We'll be seeing you swing some sticks there. Are we allowed to say where at?
Probably not.
Probably not. We won't say where at, but we'll be swinging some sticks tonight with the company.
I'm bringing my golf clubs. Is that kind of
lame? No, it's
not.
It's not. It's not.
No?
It's not. Because here's the thing. You are known serious golfer. That was me. You are known serious golfer, right? Like, we know you as the guy that golfs, that swings the sticks around the office, so we're not going to judge you for bringing your sticks. You're supposed to at a place like we're going tonight.
Yeah, at one of these entertainment golf venues. Yeah. I'm bringing my own golf clubs with me and a glove. So, like, I'm going to be
ready. The glove's a little obsessive, but yeah.
But the glove is actually more of a necessity than the clubs itself. Yeah, they don't have gloves for you there. I don't want to cut up my hands. You know, I don't have those calluses burnt on in.
Hopefully you're not swinging so crazy that you're burning up your hands. You'll be fine. Just a little fun with the company, man. A little teammate action. You don't got to overthink it.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm excited for it, though. I got something to prove tonight. Like, Miami proved something on Saturday. I'm talking all about my golf game this, my golf game that on ESPN 106.3 between the hours of 2 and 6 p.m.
Yeah.
It's time to put a little bit of where my money, where my mouth is, you know?
Yeah, what'd you say there? Your mouth?
Yeah, you put your money where your mouth was yesterday in the awesome John Martin Charity Poker Tournament at the Palm Beach Kennel Club. Yeah. And we will reveal the results of that on the other side here on ESPN 106.3.
We will talk about the John Martin Charity Poker Tournament that happened at the Palm Beach Kennel Club. We'll talk about it. And do we have to reveal, like, how we both did it? We have to do that?
Yes, we will reveal exactly what happened because we made promises to the people at that table that this story will live on.
All right. Well, that and more on the other side. That's C-Cat. I'm Theo Dorsey. We're theoretically speaking, and maybe I'll miss next segment here on ESPN 106.3.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios,
Theo Dorsey is theoretically speaking. Streaming live on YouTube, here's Theo Dorsey.
Hey, shout out my guys in the chat, man. At ESPN South Florida, you can always tap in, comment live. Shout out Vontae, good people, what's happening? And shout out my guy Brandon in West Palm Beach, talking about Notre Dame in Texas. I mean, yeah, sure. They're looking at Tulane and James Madison getting destroyed, and they're thinking we could have done better. Hey, do better in the regular season. You'll have a chance.
No, Notre Dame is looking at Tulane and James Madison get destroyed and saying, you know, we are looking for an opponent for our 2026 and 2027 season. They might be a good addition.
Yeah, and instead of us scheduling Ohio State and Miami, maybe Tulane and James Madison will be a fun go of things on a Saturday afternoon. We'll see. But, yeah, as always, you can comment, join the show, be part of it. Good people at ESPN South Florida. Tap in with us. Or you can join us on the Baptist Health Hotline at, or excuse me, not at, 888-760-3776. That's how you tap into the Baptist Health Hotline, 888-760-3776. I was just with some good people from Baptist, my guy Reggie, Priscilla. They were talking about how great the luncheon was and how much fun they had at it, how excited they are for tomorrow's Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans. And I told them, hey, just wait till you see the special guest pull up tomorrow for the in-stadium hosting Keegan-Michael Key. That thing's going to be a thrill. But Baptist Health Orthopedic Care, they treat everyone great. They treat the amateurs like pros. They treat you like a pro. They want to welcome you to being treated like a pro at Baptist Health. From sports injuries to everyday aches, our expert team delivers the same advanced care trusted by the pros. Get back to the life and the activities you love and learn more at baptisthealth.net/ortho. That's baptisthealth.net/ortho. You have joint pain. You're aching. You need to get back. You're on the mend. They can get you there. BaptistHealth.net/ortho to learn more. Hey, C-Cat, all aboard!
The SafeBound Get Around is brought to you by SafeBound Moving and Storage, South Florida's most trusted moving company. You're safe with SafeBound.
You know, I watched the Polar Express for the first time ever this weekend.
One of the latest Christmas movies that's made it into the mainstream.
Really? It's made it into the mainstream? How did it make it? Oh, because of the meme?
No, just like in general. Think about all the Christmas classics you think of.
Yeah.
Polar Express is like a 2007 joint.
Yeah.
Whereas like, most are like around the turn of the millennium or before that.
It is a Christmas classic. You're right. I see what you mean by that now. And I felt bad for never have watching it. I think I just missed it. It wasn't something I wanted to watch as a child. And as you're an adult, why would you watch that? I will say some of the trippiest animations I've ever watched, like in a movie. Like just
you don't like the guy on the top of the train?
He was weird. The little girl on the bus was a little strange. The way that she was depicted and animated, everything. It was very trippy.
Yeah, I always get cold when watching that movie because those kids are in their pajamas in a snowstorm and their slippers. That made me uncomfortable because I'm a guy that can't do well in the cold in general. My extremities freeze up and just get numb.
It's just very strange. Like, dude, I've never seen an animation movie like that. It's very strangely put together. I want to know why and why did they get rid of those. Like, it looks like AI, an AI movie almost.
Next stop.
Speaking of too cold of the Polar Express, that was Caleb Williams after throwing this pass.
On the fake, Williams looking downfield, launching downfield, going for it all! It is caught! Bears win it! DJ Moore!
We're in Chicago, we're in Chi-Town because the Bears beat the Packers 22-16 in overtime. It took a very familiar Packers fumbled onside kick recovered by the Bears, and it took Caleb Williams throwing that dime to DJ Moore. How did you receive that Bears win over the Packers to take a stranglehold on the division? And later on Sunday, we found out it clinched a postseason spot for the Bears.
I was excited, man. Number one, I found the perfect Christmas gift for my father-in-law, that cheese grater hat that DJ Moore had on in the locker room afterwards. Perfecto. As you know, my wife's side of the family, all Bears fans, so I was excited for them. The Bears group chat was lit from the fellas trip I took. So I was excited for them, man. But also what I realized is the Bears undoubtedly do have their guy, their franchise quarterback and their coach, and those are the two most important things to lock up. The best teams, the most sustainable success in the NFL comes when you have your coach and your quarterback. They've got both, and they've got both of them at early stages in their career. So we could be looking at and witnessing the start of a traditional power in the NFC going forward. And that sounds extremely weird when talking about the Chicago Bears, but that's kind of what they're building themselves up to be right now. Yeah.
Next stop.
That was it.
From elation on one part of the NFC North to devastation to the other end of the NFC North, where we saw the Steelers take on the Lions in Detroit. And with 8 seconds to go, fourth and goal, Lions got the ball at the 9-yard line. It pretty looks like the final play of the game for all intents and purposes. Take a listen.
With the season in the balance, Goff fires at the one. He didn't get across, but there are flags down. Ball ends up in the hands of Goff. He goes across. Did they have a whistle first?
There's so many things on this level that I just saw. Could be offensive pass interference, actually. And then they actually did score. When did the whistle get blown? Oh, too much for me. You go ahead, Jim.
Oh, you put it very well there, Tony. That's exactly nice. What happened in Detroit. Of course, after a lengthy review and a lengthy conversation, the official takes the field and gives this announcement after deciding with the fellas upstairs.
Touchdown, however. Oh, my goodness. Number 14 on the offense. By rule, that penalty is not enforced and there is no replay. The game is over.
So that sounds like a Detroit Lions win. He said the touchdown does stand and the penalty's not enforced. And then he realizes the head official does, so he has to correct himself a little bit.
He hears them cheering.
There is no touchdown. OPI on number 14 negates the penalty. There is no replay. The game is over.
So the Steelers get out of there with a win on the same day that the eventual Ravens took a loss to the Patriots. What did you get out of that game, Theo? Was that more of the Steelers just keep on winning, or what a disappointing season for the Lions?
The Steelers have found a way on defense, especially with the way in which they utilize Jalen Ramsey to just take the best thing away from offenses and the way in which Belichick had been doing in the past. And that worked. Like, Jahmyr Gibbs was rendered useless until late in the fourth quarter of this game. Amon-Ra St. Brown kind of got off a little bit here and there, but he wasn't destructive, and Jameson Williams was a no-show. I don't know what to make of the Steelers. I don't believe in them going forward, but they got a winning season, and they got Aaron Rodgers, and they believe in themselves, which is all that matters. That run game looked explosive in the second half. Like, I just don't – I don't even think the story of this is the Steelers. The story of this is the Detroit Lions, and they are at a mesh point in the trajectory with Dan Campbell and with Jared Goff and with that franchise. Are you going to go back to being a middling team in the NFC and an afterthought, or are you going to bounce back from this season, figure out a way to retool and become turn back into that juggernaut? And the reason why I say this is not because I think the Lions are turning the corner into becoming a bad team, but I do think the teams that are rising up above them have higher ceilings, specifically at quarterback. And at what point does that become an issue that you cannot resolve?
Yeah, especially with the first stop at the get around in Chicago with Caleb Williams with their own division, it feels a little bit more sustainable than what we saw the peak of the Lions, how they've introduced themselves to the mainstream of an actual contender in the league.
Yeah, like, and these teams aren't going away. The Eagles aren't going away. The Commanders will be back. The Lions are going to have to go through some tough teams to just make the playoffs, and the Packers and the Bears in their own division. Who knows what we see out of 9 and the Vikings next year as well. The NFC is crowded at the top, and, like, the Lions missed the playoffs just barely this year, and Dan Campbell might have been a prophet. He might have been a prophet when he spoke on specifically, hey, guys, we cannot just assume we'll just be back here next year, and they weren't.
The Safe Bound Get Around is brought to you by Safe Bound Moving and Storage, South Florida's most trusted moving company. You're safe with Safe Bound.
Mike Tannenbaum on the other side here on Theoretically Speaking, but don't you forget what's tomorrow here in South Florida in Palm Beach County, specifically at Boca Raton. It is the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans, Flagler Credit Union Stadium at FAU, 2 o'clock, Toledo versus Louisville. And I'll tell you right now, Coach Wiener, interim coach with Toledo, Coach Brom, interim coach with the Cardinals, Both of these dudes are fired up, locked in, and ready to go. You saw how intense Brom was at the podium?
Interim coach. That's Coach Brom.
No. Interim Coach Wiener.
I know. I thought you said interim Brom.
Oh, no. Maybe I did mix it up. But either way, both of those dudes were locked in.
Yeah, and then now there's the Michigan talk with Brom, too. So he's got to prove to his team that he's there for the long haul, at least for tomorrow's game.
That's all he's got. Yeah. And you know what? It's an important game. We also learned that at the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans, we're likely not going to see many kicks, many field goals, because Bush's Baked Beans, Bush's Beans, the family, the team, the organization is going to be donating $25,000 for every touchdown scored in this game. Western Kentucky scored about 63 one year. They set a record in this bowl game. We'll see if either one of these teams can try and push for that record, because it also will go towards a good cause of helping fight food insecurities in the communities of both of the schools that are playing. If you want tickets to what I expect to be an electric showdown, a shootout, if you will, BocaRatonBowl.com. Online right now, BocaRatonBowl.com. Louisville out of the ACC, Toledo out of the MACtion. Toledo looking for a third Boca Raton Bowl win. That would be a record. Louisville playing in his first ever Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans. BocaRatonBowl.com, that's the website. Get your tickets today. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. It's going to be a thrill and a joy.
And we'll be hanging out outside the stadium all leading up to kickoff. So if you see the big ESPN West Palm desk in tent, stop by, say hello.
Yeah, pull up, say hello, and tell C-Cat he's a jerk for beating me in the, taking all my money in the poker game. We'll get to that stuff as well later on in the show. But Mike Tannenbaum on the other side to give us some football insights in the NFL, so stick around. That's C-Cat. I'm Theo Dorsey. We are, theoretically speaking, on ESPN 106.3.
On the fake, Williams looking downfield, launching downfield, going for it all! It is caught! Bears win it! DJ Moore!
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, Theo Dorsey is theoretically speaking. Streaming live on YouTube, here's Theo Dorsey.
It is a beautiful, beautiful Monday, Emotion Monday here on Theoretically Speaking, December the 22nd, 3 days out from Christmas, 1 day out from the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl, and I know that there are a lot of teams, the teams that came here, a lot of people from Louisville and Toledo thinking about packing up camp and moving to South Florida when they see how fun and sunny it is, and I got the perfect place for them to go. Safebound Moving and Storage, safeboundmoving.com. You are safe with Safebound. It is South Florida's most trusted moving company. How do I know? Well, my sister used it herself. She loved it. She enjoyed it. From South Florida to Georgia, they can take you from outside of the Sunshine State to Florida. They can take you from Florida out and beyond. They could also move you within the state lines. That is how great they are. They are trained team of experts. They are actually located and based right here in West Palm Beach. Most importantly, they're family owned. It's a family business. SafeboundMoving.com, Safebound Moving and Storage. They want to get you right, so why not lock in with the good people and get right? So whether you're moving into Florida, out of Florida, or within state lines, Safebound Moving and Storage has the experience, the expertise, and the five-star customer service you can rely on. SafeboundMoving.com. You are safe with Safebound. We are going to hear some Mike Tannenbaums now from the one and only ESPN NFL insider, Mike Tannenbaum. And he joins us from the Tannenbaum Cave as he is probably deep into his insights of the NFL season. A couple of weeks left, a lot of enjoyment and excitement in the air. And Mike T, what was the biggest game, the biggest outcome that you think is going to define how the rest of this NFL season goes that we just witnessed this weekend?
Yeah, I feel like you could have asked me that question every day, Theo. We could have talked about Thursday night, Rams and Seahawks. That was the game of the year. We could have talked about Saturday night, game of the year, Bears versus Packers, and then that ending between the Steelers and the Lions was epic. So any of those games to me were critically important, and they were just absolutely incredible with endings that were, each one of those games were absolutely improbable endings.
Improbable doesn't even, like, I can't find a way to summarize what happened there on Thursday night with the two-point conversion. I was trying to explain it to my wife, who this year we've been on this journey of her learning more of the intricacies and the rules of football. And I was like, look, I've never seen anything like this happen before. So what I can tell you is that is going to inevitably end up in them actually scoring the two-point conversion. What I can't tell you is how the heck we're supposed to consume that. This is a wild, wild weekend of sports, man.
Yeah, so like going back to Thursday night, any coach starting at Pop Warner, Theo would talk about fall on the ball, you never know, fall on the ball. And fortunately for Seattle, that's what Zach Charbonnet did, somewhat improbably casually, but he did it. And then Saturday night, at one point, Next Gen Stats had the Packers, listen to this, a 99.5% chance they were going to win the game because Chicago needed a field goal, an onside kick, and a touchdown in 2 minutes. There's a 0.5% chance that's going to happen. And then yesterday, the Lion-Steeler game ended with a winning touchdown by Detroit that was nullified by the second OPI call in two plays. Like, we'll never see that in our lifetime ever again.
The Lions won twice at home and ended up losing the game somehow. Like, that was the weirdest ending, Mike T. But it's fun for football fans, specifically those who don't have those aren't my favorite teams. I was just watching it for the love of the game. For you, though, when you look at some of these teams, there's a lot of new faces, a lot of new blood at the top of the NFL right now. The Bears are 11-4. We have the Carolina Panthers leading the NFC South. The New England Patriots are 12-3. Of all of the new blood that's atop the league right now in prime position to go out and win a Super Bowl, which of these new blood teams should we actually believe in the most right now?
Gosh, that's a great question. I mean, you could throw Jacksonville in there a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, when Bryce Young came out, a lot of people really ironically compared him to Steph Curry. Undersized, athletic, clutch, and figures out a way to win. And you look at the end of the game, that pass to Jontavian Sanders, that was Steph Curry playing football. Undersized, rattled, screams out of a position, has good fundamentals, looks down the field, throws a game-winning touchdown. I don't know. There's something about that team to me that Bryce Young is starting to turn the corner, and he's a winner. I don't know how sustainable it is, but I think those are one of those teams, Theo, that quietly nobody really is going to want to play if they get into the tournament.
Mike T, I'm curious for you as a person that sat in those seats as a general manager, and you had to use your insights to make big selections, specifically at the most important position in all of team sports, at quarterback. Bryce Young, to me, feels like one of the last of a dying breed, and that is the small quarterback. Like, as we see Kyler Murray fizzle out in Arizona, as we see Tua not work out so much in Miami, it seems like that exception is starting to wear off a bit. Where do you think the league is on taking risks on guys with Bryce Young's frame and stature, especially those that don't have the elite athleticism that at least Kyler Murray showed?
Yeah, I'm a big, like, stats and data guy, and, it's just over time, the big guy is going to win, over the smaller guy. That's why one of the reasons I love Justin Herbert coming out, when he did. I want them to look like Cam Newton. I want them to look like Jalen Hurts or Ben Roethlisberger. Like, the big rugged guy over time, Josh Allen, they're going to win. I mean, Lamar Jackson is a reasonably built guy, and he got hurt again last night, and the smaller guys, be it Tua, Kyler Murray, Bryce Young, like, that's not to say they can't have productive careers. The best example is probably Drew Brees. All I'm saying is, if we were running a football team, over time, the bigger guy has a better chance than the small guy. And even the bigger guys, be it Joe Burrow, missed a lot of time this year. Lamar missed a lot of time. And even when Lamar played, he just didn't look right. So it's a physical sport. Durability is massively important. Like, another big one to me is Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels has a chance to be a transformational player, but he needs to stay healthy.
And wasn't that was the biggest knock, right? Coming out in the draft, it was the recklessness in which Jaden Daniels played, and that recklessness you would assume would translate into injuries, especially when you're playing up against bigger and faster and stronger guys. Now we're seeing that happen already in year two. So, like, the caution flags are out there around Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, and they love him in Washington, and he has a chance to be a superstar. Ironically, he's sandwiched between Caleb Williams and Drake May. A year ago, we would have said, hey, it's a no-brainer. You had to take Jaden number one, and now you toss him up into, obviously a different order based on this year. So, we'll see how it turns out. But I don't think there's any question how you pay these players, how you draft them, develop them. Size is so critical. And I talk to a lot of college players, and I tell them, look at Jalen Hurts. There's nothing guaranteed, but if you look at Jalen Hurts from the waist down, that's what an NFL player looks like. He squats a lot. He cleans a lot. and that lower body is a great foundation. Again, anybody could get hurt on any given play, but over time, when you're physically built the way he is, you have a better chance of remaining healthy.
Mike Tannenbaum joining us here on Theoretically Speaking. Dropping some Mike Tannenbaums here on Emotion Monday. I am not a Tennessee Titans fan, but as a Miami Hurricane fan, I am a huge fan and an emotional investor into the career of Cam Ward. The Titans get the blowout win over the Chiefs. Ward looked good as he has at a lot of points this season. But Mike T, like, is that a good win for the Titans? Because it does hurt them in their chances. You know, they had a top two pick. I think they fell down to number five. Like, with your GM cap on, if you can be objective about this, does the pros of getting a good win to give guys the good energy of winning a football game outweigh the cons of them slipping in the draft order for you? And there, Mike. Oh, there he is. Okay.
He's back. Yeah. No, it's funny. Like, these are things that come up every year, like with ownership. You know, owners are up there, you know, kind of rooting against their team. But look, every Cam Ward productive, you know, outing is good for their future, and he has to earn the trust of his teammates. So I think that was a good day at the office for him, and I'm very bullish on him.
I'm bullish on Cam Ward as well. I think that the ceiling is high with him. How much of an opportunity do you think that is for head coaching? Like, is there certain names that are being thrown out around there that might be the next head coach of the Titans because they want to coach Cam Ward?
Yeah, I think the names to look for are Matt Nagy. There's some Kansas City influences in that front office, and Mike Borgonzi, who came there from Kansas City. So Matt Nagy, who has a big track record of quarterback development. Mike McCarthy, Green Bay. Another guy is in their front office who runs football operations, Chad Brinker. So I think those are a couple names. But if you have a chance to be a head coach, it's a little bit like Lee and Cone, who's now doing a great job in Jacksonville being paired with Trevor Lawrence. Like, someone's going to look at Cam Ward and say, wow, this guy has a chance to be a great quarterback. A lot of work to do there, but that's a great start.
Last one here. Speaking of rookie quarterbacks in the NFL today, as we're wrapping up the 2025 regular season, I want you to tell me which of these guys you would bet on the future of between, and we'll take Cam Ward out of it because he's the number one overall pick and no other quarterback was drafted near him, but between Jackson Dart with the New York Giants, Shador Sanders with the Cleveland Browns, and then the man who doesn't get talked about enough, who led the Saints to another victory, Tyler Shuck with the New Orleans Saints out there balling out with Keenum calling plays. Which of those three guys would you bet on the future? Or excuse me, I said Keenan. Kellen Moore calling plays. Which of those three guys, though, would you bet on the future of going forward based on what you've seen this season?
Yeah, I mean, right now, Shug and Sanders have pulled ahead of Dart. You know, I had something on social before. Jackson Dart, over the last month, Theo, has not played good football at all. And if they went up with the first pick, I think taking Fernando Mendoza is a no-brainer. Shug's been impressive, but I want to see more of Shador, because I think what we're seeing with Shador, first of all, I think the mistake Cleveland made is drafting both Dillon Gabriel and Shador. I don't think the way football is practiced now, you could get two guys ready to go. So I think Shador is making up for lost time. I think he's encouraging. I would say Shug's played better in games so far, but these next two games, I'm super intrigued by Shador because I think he is getting better and we're seeing the ability. He has good size. He has a good arm. I had him in the second round in the draft. I was shocked that he fell as far as he did, and I think he's playing good football.
And then what you just said about the Giants, though, I got to back up to that. You think there's a chance if they get the number one overall pick, they go quarterback?
I don't know how you can't. I mean, Fernando Mendoza led Indiana to the first Big Ten title since 1967. He beat a defense in Ohio State, Theo, that's going to have at least five first-round picks, coached by a guy in Matt Patricia, who has three Super Bowl rings as an NFL defensive coordinator, and you're going to stick with a guy that's been as inconsistent as Jackson Dart. I would trade Dart for a one, and I would take Mendoza, because the risk you have, if the Giants have the first pick and they pass on Mendoza, and he turns out to be Matt Ryan, who that's who I think he looks like, you know, plays like, gosh, I think it's a big risk. I think Mendoza has a chance to be a really good player, you know, strong arm. I like Dante Moore a lot. We don't know if he's coming out, but if you pass on Mendoza, I think there's a big, big risk in doing so.
Woo! Now that is a Mike Tannenbaum. And I must say, Mike, I agree with you that I would bank on the future of Mendoza over Jackson Dart to date as well. But it feels like a very gutsy move to make because Dart has a fan base.
But Theo, the inverse is as gutsy, which is if you draft, you know, Francis Maiuaga from Miami, who's going to be a great tackle, and you see Mendoza going up and down the field as a Jet or as a Saint or as a Brown, that's gutsy as well.
You're right. You're right. I would love to see if they pull the trigger. It would be a la, I think the last time I've seen something like this happen would have been the Cardinals, right, with Rosen and Kyler Murray. So would love to see if something like that shakes out. But, man, that is that's a Mike Tannenbaum right there, Mike T. I appreciate that.
All right.
Enjoy your week of football like we will as well, and enjoy the holidays. Early Merry Christmas and a happy holidays to you and the fam, man.
Yeah, you too. Great being with you all year, and happy holidays. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
Thank you, Mike T. That is Mike Tannenbaum dropping a Mike Tannenbaum on us. If the Giants get the number one overall pick, C-Cat, they go quarterback. And I must agree. I know you disagree. I know you're big dart guy.
Well, I was, and Mike's right. Like, the past month has not been great for Jackson Dart, and because the Giants have been just kind of out of it in terms of what matters right now, they've been out of the playoff race for a while, injuries. Ooh. I've been able to get away with just not talking about Jackson Dart. So
I'm glad you're being honest, though. I'm glad.
Seriously, he just hasn't played very well. And it's semi-excusable in terms of all of his weapons are hurt.
That's true.
And, they're not playing for anything right now except for the development of Jackson Dart, the quarterback. But the health risks that he takes are very high. It's into a range in terms of how many concussion evaluations he does get. I mean, and he hasn't completed his first year. Yeah,
he might have surpassed concussion evaluations over Tua in his first year. And I will say, before we go to break here, that was my only point initially as Jackson Dart's star was rising. I said, hey, first of all, he doesn't have the frame to be playing as recklessly as he does. And secondly, y'all are praising him as the next great quarterback, but he's not really throwing the football very well. Those two things have derailed over the past month.
Yeah.
We'll see how it ends up working out, though, long term.
And also, there are three things that have happened in the past month. Dart's played worse. Mendoza's played better.
Yeah.
And the Giants have been losing enough to where they are in Mendoza range. They're above the Mendoza line.
Wow. I like it.
Okay.
Look at what you just did.
This is, you know what? All right.
This is theoretically speaking.
We're going to cover ahead.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Theoretically speaking here on ESPN 106.3.